You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week I will bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. I will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and many ways to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who have worked to make this world a better place for all of us. And I'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, our topic today is teaching self-regulation skills to children. And I'm pleased to have on the show today Jeff Golitz. Jeff is currently a program developer, senior trainer, and education specialist with the Nonprofit Institute of HeartMath. Now, he regularly consults with college and school professionals, therapists, and parents to help improve classroom climate, child behavior, and academic performance. In the last 10 years, Jeff has created or been a major contributor to numerous educational programs designed to improve social and emotional learning. Now, last year, Jeff helped create a pilot program to aid struggling adolescent readers in stress reduction while enhancing academic performance. He is the co-author of the College De-Stress Handbook and Using EM Wave Technology with ADHD Children. Jeff, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you, Alan. Thanks for having me on this beautiful, bright Monday morning.
Well, it's for those listening out there, we had a chance to talk, Jeff and I did, off the airwaves, and we are both in California, and it is absolutely beautiful here today. So, yes, thank you for sharing that. Now, Jeff, now to begin with, I mean, just explain a little bit about what HeartMath is.
Institute of HeartMath is a nonprofit research and education corporation in Northern California. We're actually in Santa Cruz County, and we've been around since 1991. And that's actually a long time for an organization now. I think we're in our 21st or 22nd year. And what we do is we promote self-regulation skills to a wide variety of populations. Certainly children and parents, students and educators, that's my area of specialty. I'm an educator in background. But we also do a lot of interventions and training for corporations, hospitals, probably did maybe 3,000 soldiers going off to Afghanistan and before that Iraq, lots of government agencies. We also do a lot of scientific research, but what we're best known for is our research into the role of the heart in decision-making, performance, and overall health. Just one last thing, Alan, we started the organization because we believe in the power of the heart, but not the sugary, sweet, emotional perception of the heart, but more the historical center of who we are. And we also measure the heart, mathematically speaking. We actually put electrodes on the heart and actually see what people are thinking and feeling and how that affects the heart rhythms. And I'll talk about that a little more later on.
Okay. Well, I know that to me, at least, it seems like there is a lot more stress in everybody's lives, but more particularly, there seems to be a lot more stress in the lives of children these days. Now, why is self-regulation so important for children's growth and development?
This is really there's two parts to this question. Let me address the first part that you talked about, the more stress in the lives of children. Well, first of all, there's a lot more stress these days among everyone.
I agree.
Children. It's just overall, if you just kind of put your finger out and take the temperature, so to speak, there's just a lot more uncertainty for people, and that includes things like the economy, issues about our natural environment. Life is a lot more competitive, both at work and at school. There's more noise. There's more input. More complex decisions, and everyone feels it to some degree. Just think about the average large global event like a tsunami or a terrorist attack, or more recently the Pope resigns. That seems to all have a ripple effect on all of us. So unless we have more resilience and a reservoir of positivity, if you will, these things are going to affect us. So we're all affected. Let me just address a couple things to one of my from another angle. I work a lot with schools, and let's just zero in on the new academic expectations for kids and how that plays out with stress. I don't know, Alan, there was a couple of years ago, there was a feature article in Newsweek, and I think it was entitled something like The New First Grade. And what they're referring to is actually the new first grade is kindergarten, meaning the academic expectations and the sophistication of the classroom that used to take place in first grade is now happening in kindergarten. The same expectations. So they're expected to learn language, to read, to get along with others, all that kind of stuff. I just recently was teaching 150 eighth grade San Jose students in their algebra classes how to approach test taking, and on the wall were all these academic standards that they had to learn, and there was a pretty severe shortage of time and lots of pressure. Did you have a comment?
Oh, no, go right ahead.
Okay. Well, but I also did hear some really interesting research. This is from the American Psychological Association, 2010, some interesting findings. And I'll just highlight a few. But a majority of the parents don't think that their children are strongly affected by their stress. But children say the exact opposite. I think 69% of their parents in this survey said their stress has very little or no effect. But 91% of their children said yes. They know their parents are stressed because they observe a wide range of behaviors, yelling, arguing, complaining, worrying. So when parents are stressed or worried, a lot of the kids are sensing that. They sense when their parents are stressed, and that when they feel their parents are stressed, they feel the stress. So the experience of stress, it creates difficulty for children when they're trying to learn at school, when they're trying to get along with others, when they're trying to make self-intelligent choices. So what self-regulation does, that's the second part of that question, that helps with their decision-making and their behavior. It, like, creates a pause, so they're less reactive, and their thinking brain has more of a chance to make a more intelligent decision. So self-regulation, it has an enormous role, actually, on children's behavior.
Well, and going back to the stress part a little bit, so it sounds like, I mean, it's twofold. I mean, one is that it's the stress that they're getting not only from the parents, but also within the schools. And what I've noticed is that with all of the new testing that they do, everything is a test. You know, they're, and when I talk with teachers and they say that they really have, there's no more there's no more ability for them to, you know, to sort of, you know, teach outside of the box. There's, you know, they can't just instruct and see that people are getting it, that everything has to be, you know, very much a test that somebody at a higher level, at a district level or whatever, can see, that isn't necessarily, what some of the teachers say, isn't necessarily, you know, accurate to what a particular child can or can't do as far as their participation and everything else, and just the sheer fact that maybe they couldn't remember something, or that they just, you know, they, one example I was given was that they were a great student and was really participating in class and everything was great, but that their anxiety when they would take a test caused them to forget certain things. And so you have an incredibly intelligent child, according to the teacher, that is getting low marks because the only way that the teacher is allowed to judge them or grade them is based on those tests.
it's crazy that we've kind of come to that, even though there's an importance of assessment to be able to measure and perhaps correct any academic deficiencies that a child might have. But to put everything on the test, as we know, is overblown, and I think most teachers sense that. We haven't found a balanced solution for that yet. But nonetheless, if you look at just even in California, you look at the rates for acceptance among high school students to some of our colleges and universities, they're just very difficult to get into. And that, so that that's a high school senior or a junior that's looking at what colleges and what their GPA is and what are their standardized test scores. That actually trickles all the way down to kindergarten and first grade, where the kids are expected to be more academically ready or ready to learn, as they say. And that puts a lot of stress because kids learn at different rates. They don't process information the same way. They're not all wired the same, and yet we have these uniform expectations. So it is challenging for the families. It's challenging for some students, and it's challenging for the educators to individualize or customize learning, try to lessen the stress expectations or the expectations on kids. But at the same time, their schedules are so packed, as you were talking about earlier, that there's very little wiggle room for some of the typical subjects like art, like PE, music, that that previously would take out some of the E's. So schools are having a hard time because they have to meet these expectations because we live in a more competitive world, and they have to make sure that they try to educate every single child, not just the select few, and it puts a lot of strain on everyone concerned.
Well, and I agree with the concept that we want to educate every child. That part I get. And in fact, I'd like to quote John Maxwell in the sense he talks about as far as our school system, to where if you have a child that is having difficulty in one particular area, that right now the system is set up to put 70 or 80% of their time into that particular area. So, for instance, if you have a child that's incredibly talented artistically, you know, they really get, they get science, they get, social studies, they love history, they get all of these things, but that they just don't get math. That rather than us continue to instill upon them how great they're doing at these things that they're doing well, instead of that, we only spend 20% of the time on the stuff that's going to make them feel good about themselves, and we spend 70 or 80% of the time on the one thing that they don't do well. And I couldn't agree more with him, and he has a great statement in regards to that particular point. He said, for instance, with math, that was his one thing that he wasn't good at, and his thinking was, you know what, let me be good at all these other things and hire somebody to count my money later.
Right. Yeah. It takes some sensitivity, it takes some skill, it takes some awareness on both educators and parents to be able to help children navigate through the educational system and stay sane and stay moderately healthy with one's self-esteem, to emphasize the assets. But also, we don't want to be naive and eliminate all challenges, because none of us are going to be good at everything. There's very few of us that are Renaissance men or women. But how can we keep everybody relatively healthy in their mental state so they have confidence at least to go forward in one area? And that's the challenge. That's the balancing act that some people are better at than others.
Okay. Now, in this area, I mean, as a parent, and many of our listeners are parents, but we also have quite a few teachers as well, and people in the psychological helping fields that I know listen because they email us and text us. What can parents and teachers do? What roles can we play in helping these children in the development of their own self-regulation?
Well, let me first talk a little bit about what is self-regulation, because that's a buzzword there, and in some contexts that's a technical phrase. But it's self-regulation basically is the ability to control and direct one's feelings, thoughts, and actions. At its most simplest, you can look at it as impulse control, and as the skill set becomes more advanced. We refine our behavior and our speech. And just lots of examples where self-regulation is needed. Every child has hundreds of choices and decisions they make every day, most of them unconscious, what to say, what to do. Couple examples. Here's the prototypical example. Does that four-year-old choose to follow his parents' instructions to go to bed, or does the child resist? How does that play out? Is this an ongoing pattern or something isolated? Does the child have an ability to self-regulate there and find a middle ground or a compromise? An eight-year-old, this happens a lot. It's in our minds a lot. Is the social relationships, because they really start to pop for children, developmentally speaking, when they're about eight or nine, when the social relationships become as important almost as their parental relationships. And a typical scenario is if a girl's friend is being teased, how does she choose to respond to that girl who's being teased? How does she defend her? Does she react with physical and verbal aggression? Or does she say something firm in response? Does she quietly withdraw? So these are, you get into teens and facing risky behavior, these are the kind of decisions that children face every day. And we ask at HeartMath, what's their mental and emotional physical state that's behind these decisions? What examples are being set at home? We know that self-regulation is a learned behavior. Just think of all the games we learn, what many of us learn when we're young, and unfortunately some of those are evaporating. I don't know about you, Alan, but I played a lot of red light, green light. Remember that?
Oh, sure.
Simple Simon Says, hide and seek, role playing. All these games we played, they allowed us to pay attention, allowed us to follow rules. We learned how to deal with disappointment along with success.
Right.
And very importantly, we learned how to wait our turn. We learned to be patient. We learned how to get along with others. So this is the beginning of self-regulation. So my first response to your earlier question is, make sure that your children are participating in a lot of social games or activities or sports, because behind that, there's a lot of structures, there's a lot of rules, and you have to learn how to get along with people. So those are great examples. And I give an example that I recently had to mediate recently over Christmas, where there was a big fight between two family members, not direct family but indirect family. One was a young man in his 20s, one was another man in his 30s, and they just had a lot of blame and anger towards one another. And I was able to kind of mediate so they weren't able to come to blows. But they are at a point now where some bad things were said, and as a result, they're just distancing themselves. And there was just no self-regulation there. They sort of just vented and went off with one another. And these are the kind of things where if you're not learning to, and we're all going to have moments where we lose it occasionally. That goes without saying. But
Right. Can
we learn to kind of govern our behavior in a day-to-day sense, so we can make more intelligent decisions? And that's what it's all about. What kind of tips or activities can parents do? Can I talk a little bit about that?
Please do.
Get more concrete.
Yeah.
Well, just look at the average working day of a parent these days. You wake up, you shower, you put on your clothes, you prepare breakfast, oftentimes prepare lunch for your child. Then you and your child rush off to school or work, long day, and you repeat the process sometimes at home. So our lives are very busy. They're very hectic. They're very stressful. So what are we communicating to our children just by our lifestyle? Think of Maria Montessori and that great book she wrote, The Absorbent Mind. Basically, it was just over 100 years ago, that great Italian educator who founded the whole Montessori movement.
Right.
Just think about that title and what impact it has for children. Children absorb everything we say and do. They absorb our behavior. They absorb our words. And those are, and unwittingly, all the time, we're modeling that. So in this very fast-paced world we live in, and it's unavoidable because we have so many things to do, life is hectic. One of the first things we try to counsel parents, educators, or anyone for that matter is try to bring some calm and composure into your daily life. And that's easier said than done. But you have to choose it. Carve out some moments, maybe 3 or 4, 1 or 2 or 3 minute breaks during the day when you pause. You disengage from your technology, from your phones, from your work, whether you're in the car, whether you're taking a break at work, whenever it is, and just breathe. Just practice a self-regulation technique, and I'll detail one that we use a lot with a lot of people called quick coherence, but I'll talk about that later. Just try to slow down on the inside. And it's making a conscious choice that by slowing down now, I'm pausing and I'm giving my brain a break. And then giving your brain a break, actually what that does is it allows the brain to rest. It allows your heart, your emotions to sort of just settle down a little bit, because emotions drive our brain activity a lot.
Right.
And it gives us perspective. Just let everything go and breathe. And it's that type of calming influence that we want to have more of with our children in this very hectic, busy world, because they're our first students. So modeling being calm and being more composed is hugely important, but it's not going to land on your doorstep. You have to make a choice as a parent that you value this type of experience. And you have to actually get practical and carve out some moments. And I always, when I'm working with parents, I say, take a week, not 2 weeks, not 3 weeks, and try during your day to just do some breathing activity. Just slow down. Maybe you're looking at the beach. Maybe you're walking in a park. Maybe you're just sitting on your chair and just breathing. Just kind of slow down on the inside. That's really, really important. Secondly, and I'm just going to give you a list of things here that I compiled, and if you're listening as a parent, sort of do a check, a mental check mark, because some of you already do these things. But the importance of structure and predictability is really important to the calm and the peace of children, because what that's doing is giving security to your child so they feel more calm, less chaotic. Make sure that you have regular time for when you go to bed, for eating, whether it's chore time or family events, whatever it may be. That predictable schedule helps give some security and calmness. It's a home base. So emotionally speaking, kids feel more calm, not crazy hecticness. Another thing that I talk a lot about with parents is what I call crucial conversations. Those daily conversations you want to have with your child. How are you? What's going on? What did you learn today? And try to be a good listener. And again, that means slowing down on the inside. Otherwise, it just simply becomes like a mental exercise. And our children can pick that up if you're insincere. Bedtime is a really great way to do it, to review the day when life has slowed down. Another tip I talk a lot about is anticipating transitions. When you're going from one event to another, when you're leaving for school, when you're leaving for the shopping center, when you're going to a friend's house, allow some prep time, because the brain actually has this, and it's slowly developing in children. It needs the capacity to plan, to anticipate. I need to do A, B, C in order to get ready to go to school. And what that does is you're developing the cortex, the thinking part of the brain, the part that regulates the emotion or the more reactive or instinctive parts. So that helps kids be prepared, and you can slow down that. Just a couple more things. A lot to share. Try to identify those times when children are predictably the most reactive or impulsive. And this is actually a kind of a subset of what I just shared. And try to prepare them through a self-regulation technique, like a breathing technique. If they're about to have a test, and it's Wednesday, and there's going to be a large test, and they normally get quite anxious, and about 25% of all kids, by the way, our research confirms, have serious test anxiety, that it interferes with their test taking, to refer back to an earlier point. So a few days in advance, and this is what we counsel teachers for, you want to teach kids a calming technique. simple breathing technique, and I'll detail that in the next moment. Just so they prepare in advance, and you want to do it when they're feeling calm, because they'll learn better and they'll absorb more when they're feeling calm rather than anxious.
Yep.
And this could be either for a test, it could be going over to a friend's house for a birthday party, or maybe your child is just overly excited about going on a fishing trip or a camping trip, and you want to teach a self-regulation tool there to calm down. What that's doing, it's planting seeds into your child's brain, a reference point. Mm-hmm. Oh, there's not just the anxious or the overly amped part of my brain. There's this calming side, and you're building the seed so there's a reference point to go back to. So it comes in their vocabulary, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
A couple more points now.
Okay.
Look, you can't, it's hard to raise parents by yourself these days. I've raised kids, by yourself these days.
Hey, and it's even harder to raise parents.
Yeah, indeed. Exactly. I'm thinking of a mother who came to one of her trainings, and she said, yes, I have three people I raise. Two of them are my children, and the other one's my husband. But don't be shy about seeking help and talking to other parents or grandparents. That exchange, that you get support, you get creative answers, that's so, so helpful. So ask yourself as a parent, how often are you talking to other parents or grandparents or health professionals, mental health professionals in particular, just seeking out advice? You're not expected to have all the answers, and you get a lot of support that's so, so crucial. And the other thing I would say also, going back into earlier point when we were talking about some of the games like Red Light, Green Light, or even Hide and Seek, is involve your children as much as possible in clubs or activities where there's lots of people, whether it's sports, whether it's a class. What that does with children very early on is it builds resiliency, it builds self-restraint, it builds growth. These days, children are a key phrase that's being passed on around a lot about educators is how learner ready are they as they come to school? Are they prepared to sit still and pay attention, which whether we like it or not, that's what school requires.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to sort of be in your A game, in your body, in your mind, your emotions, be able to focus. So, but helping kids be in social situations exposes them to a whole bunch of situations where they have to learn to regulate their behavior. And it's kind of forced on them because you don't want to be embarrassed and stand up by yourself. So, and the last thing I'll share is nature. And where we live here in the Santa Cruz Mountains, of course, we have lots of nature around us. But what nature does, whether you're at the beach, whether you're at the park, wherever you are, sitting in your backyard, it helps us calm down a little bit. Nature has a soothing effect on us. Just the sheer greenery makes us relax. So that's a real important thing is for you and your child to go to the beach, to chill out, to go to the ocean, go to the parks. Real, real important to kind of have a calming effect rather than just being in front of the screen or rather than being in school where they're just your brain is constantly activating. We need those rhythms in our life to slow down and then to speed up to have more balance.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And one of the things that you mentioned, and I wanted to add to when you talked about the fact of you know, discussing with your children how their day went, you know what's going on in their day. And one of the things that I've learned and passed on is change up your questions. In other words, if in every situation you have it to where, you know, so how was your day? So how was your day? Well, after 200 or 300, how was your days? You're going to start getting just, you know, a patented answer. Okay, you know, it was fine or something like that. Change up your questions to the point that it needs more than a yes or no answer, number one. Mm-hmm. And number two, questions, you know, make it something to where, what was the most interesting thing about your day? Well, you can't answer that yes or no, but also today it might be what was the most interesting. The next day it might be what was the most amazing thing about your day? What was the most creative thing that you did today? So I think if we do that as parents, we're going to be much more involved in what it is that they are doing, and it's
they're going to feel like we also now appreciate more of the things that they're going through.
Really good point, Alan, to diversify those questions so it doesn't become something rote. It has to be authentic. It has to kind of come from the heart, and it becomes an intimate moment that all children, most children anyway, quietly want, or sometimes they loudly want. Of course, that changed a little bit when we become teens. So those kind of same questions you have to get really creative with. And part of that also, as a parent, involves your own storytelling. You model what the conversation was. Well, you wouldn't believe what happened to me. And then this happened. And then here's where it finally led me to. A lot of research has been done, by the way, on how children observe and watch what happens with children. And kids are so intimately, so emotionally connected to their parents in most cases. And for instance, when there's a heated argument between parents, that's going to happen when there's disagreements in many cases. But what kids want the most and what's most healthiest for them is when they can see that there's a resolution that happens.
Yes.
And so in your storytelling as a parent, and I isolated with a conflict, let's say, with your spouse, but in storytelling, try to have some resolutions rather than just vent and complain. See if you can find some sense of peace or resolution to any issues you have so it doesn't become a venting situation, because you want to keep it on a positive note as much as possible.
Right, and I couldn't agree more, and I love the fact you brought it up. Keep it authentic and keep it from the heart. We are talking with Jeff Golitz, and we are talking about heart math and self-regulation skills within our children. If you want to follow along with us, you can go to their website. It's www.heartmath.org. That's heartmath.org. Now, obviously, for those of you driving, you're not going to be able to do that. But if you are at your computer, we're going to take a break now, open up another screen, take a look at what we're talking about, and we will be back in 1 minute with Answers for the Family.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
And we're back. We're talking with Jeff Golitz, the co-author of The College De-Stress Handbook and Using the EM Wave Technology with ADHD Kids. Now, Jeff, I know we were talking a little bit about heart math, and we were talking about self-regulation skills, but you know, I've learned that heart math also teaches self-regulation skills to people of all ages. Now, do you use different techniques for different ages? And if so, can you share some of those techniques and how people or children use them in their daily life?
Yes, Alan, we do have a range of techniques for different populations, but I'll share with you the most basic one that we share with adults and teens, and then I'll diversified a little bit with some applications for children. And they're really simple, and do not let the simplicity deceive you in terms of its impact, its effectiveness. A lot of people, tens of thousands of people, use these tools daily when it comes to decision making, performance, reduction of stress, etc. The quick coherence technique has a couple easy steps. And I can't do these embellished steps over the line here because it'll take too long, but the listeners can follow very shortly. First step is called heart focus. So you shift your focus from your thinking brain, your interpretive brain, which is active most of the time, and you shift your focus down to the center of the chest or the heart area. Heart focus. Second step is heart breathing. You breathe through your chest area or your heart area. Breathe in for 5 seconds. Breathe out for 5 seconds. Just try that right now. Just try to leave behind whatever your agenda is or whatever activity you have going on. Shift your focus down to the center of the chest and breathe in for 5 seconds and breathe out for 5 seconds. Do a few cycles of that breathing process.
And for those of you driving, keep your eyes open.
Yeah, absolutely. And good point. Actually, most of the time, people do this with their eyes open. You could do it any time, any place. No one even knows you're doing it. You could do it in your own privacy. And then the last step, the third step, is actually adding a layer of what we call heart feeling or appreciation. Try to identify someone or something that you appreciate. Pets are perhaps the most universally loved source of appreciation. Sometimes with other people, we have mixed feelings to them, with them, or a place in nature. So, just to recap, heart focus, heart breathing, heart feeling. You do it for about 1 to 2 minutes. Try to sustain your focus as much as possible, even though the thinking brain is going to come back up. And you want to try to carve out some times during the day, maybe 2 or 3 times of little breaks. You can even do it while you're driving. Again, with your eyes open, you can do it in a meeting. You can do it in transitions. You can do it as a preparatory step before an important meeting, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
So heart focus, heart breathing, heart feeling, easy to do, but you have to be genuine in doing it. Now, for older kids, children that might be 8 to 12 years old, we have something called heart shift. Heart shift. You shift from your thinking brain down to the center of your chest. You just breathe rhythmically through your heart area. And you try to find something to appreciate. So the same steps, but it's named a little differently. And then for children, we have a tool. These are children, 4 to 6, 3 to 6, called Shift and Shine, where you do the same heart focus. You breathe in and out of your heart, and then you try to think of someone that makes you happy, and you shine that warm feeling towards them, almost like the sun is shining its rays. Shift and Shine. We do that extensively, and we have a program for preschoolers. I'm writing a new booklet called Heart to Heart for children 3 to 6 and their parents, and that uses the Shift and Shine technique in that. So these are real simple tools. But again, they're not going to land on your doorstep. You have to do it while you're calm, and you build up some, you try to embed it as a routine, and then apply it to more challenging areas. If you learn, you try to apply this technique into an immediately challenging area of your life, your brain's going to go into fight or flight mode. And it's going to, rather than seeking problems, it's going to actually be in a reactive mode. It's hard to access the quick coherence step or that the self-regulation tool if you're in one of those agitated moods. So that's why you have to kind of build it up into a habit so you feel comfortable doing it and then apply it.
Right. So what you're saying is not only get into the habit of doing this, you get up every morning, it's a great way to start your day, but learn that when those times do occur to where you feel like, you know, your anxiety is building up, learn how to step back from it, go through your breathing exercises, and then move forward. I mean, that's what I hear you saying. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. You captured it well. I work a lot with parents, and I work with children who have anxiety issues. And I'm an educator. I'm not a therapist, keep in mind, like that. But we talk about practicing it on their own, quietly, just for a few moments, but doing it several times during the day, in between activities or before activities again, so that when they need it the most, in a challenging situation, when they get stressed out, they have enough background or experience to apply it. And it seems to be fairly successful for a lot of people.
Right, and as you mentioned, being an educator, we've also had medical doctors on the show, and it's amazing how many of them will say that so many of the actual physical diseases or the physical ailments that our body has can be dealt with if we can just reduce our stress.
Well said, Alan. In fact, I'm becoming a regular attendee now is at the National School-Based Health Conference. And these are nurses who reside at schools. And in the last conference I was at, where I was both a speaker and an exhibitor and talking to many, many nurses, they said over and over again, 80% of the physical symptoms we see are the result of mental health issues. So mental health is taking on a much bigger role for not only school nurses, but for teachers as well. They realize that the mental health of children is really, really important. It has an enormous role on their choices, their decisions, their behavior, their performance, and their relationships. So it's something not to be shirked, and it's not a stigma. We all need better mental health in this day and age when there's a lot of stress. And these are some simple techniques that can be used effectively to reduce your stress and just have a little more bubble or lightness or buoyancy in your life.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Now, and as I was going to your website and I was learning more about your organization, I read that you've developed a user-friendly heart rhythm monitor that is widely used by parents, educators, and clinicians. Can you explain a little bit about what that is and how it's used?
Yeah, this is terribly fun, and this has kind of been exploding for us. It's called M-Wave Technology, EMWAVE Technology. And what it does is it measures your heart rhythms. And in a way, if you look at the name heart math, we mathematically measure the hearts. So what this does is it uses a little ear sensor or finger sensor in some cases, and you connect it to your computer. Mm-hmm. Got to have the software, and it demonstrates in real time on a computer screen how your emotions and attitudes are affecting your heart rhythm patterns. For instance, if you're frustrated, the patterns of your heart rhythms are going to look like a seismograph. They're going to be very irregular, in contrast to when you feel more calm or composed or appreciative, your heart rhythms will have these even rhythms, these smooth rhythms. And it's quite distinct, and this dates back to our original research in the American Journal of Cardiology, so this is very research-based, mm-hmm. that showed that our emotions affect the patterns of our heart rhythms. And so we're taking the focus, that we're including the brain, obviously, but we're bringing in more of a heart-centric application here. We're not just measuring EEG or brain waves, but we're measuring the heart rhythms. And the way this is played out with families, with educators, with therapists, is they use this technology called the M-Wave technology. There's one for computers and there's a handheld one to teach self-regulation. So the more you're able to maintain calm and composure doing that breathing technique that I was talking to earlier, then you'll get feedback on this technology, on the software, what degree of what we call coherence is. And in the booklet I wrote earlier using the M-Wave technology with children who are profiled with ADHD, a lot of that is teaching these children who have troubles with behavioral management, mm-hmm. to be able to not repress, but to better manage their habitual instinctive behavior that gets them in trouble, to improve their focus and self-control. And this is all recently published in a peer-reviewed journal. Also, I'll mention one more thing, Alan. It's kind of exciting. This week, if I'm not mistaken, we have a new technology that is called Inner Balance. And this is going to be for iPhones, iPads, iPod Touches. And that will be coming out this week. We're just getting the app approved by Apple Technology. So this will be a whole other level in addition to the M-Wave technology. And you can Google M-Wave technology or get a hold of me at heartmath.org if you want further information on this. I work
absolutely
a lot with people on this. It's terribly fun.
Oh, and I love it. And in this day and age with kids, all, you know, all of them having some form of smartphone, the combination of that and the fact that we have become such an incredibly visual society, that for them to be able to look at it on their own technology and see the difference in their heart rate when they're, you know, maybe feeling anxiety versus immediately after going through the breathing or during the breathing exercise, I think is brilliant. I mean, I think that's going to be really beneficial for kids and actually for all of us.
seeing is believing. So you're absolutely right. And recently, the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal wrote up about this technology. So it's taken a much bigger role, and especially the need for improved mental health for everyone.
Okay. You know, I just looked up. Time has been flying by. We've got about 4 minutes, and we have some listener questions that have come in. One of them reads, it says, Alan, after visiting after visiting your guest site, I was curious if HeartMath has made any impact with children who have autism. My son made significant improvement since we made dietary changes and implemented PEMF sessions, but we are still exploring other new techniques that may keep the momentum going.
It's a great question, and I'll be brief. Yes, we have. We haven't done any studies with children with autism, but we have a lot of anecdotal evidence. Recently, I did a webinar with a wonderful lady named Martha Herbert, Harvard Medical, who wrote the book called Autistic Revolution, and she's now employing this technology with her a multitude of strategies. So, yes, this is a growing area for us. I'm in almost weekly contact with a number of educators and parents, as well as a couple dissertations that are going on with people studying children with autism.
That's great. And then we have another email that has come in. It says, you know, after reading the post on Answers for the Family, I did a search on YouTube and found a video by Greg Braden where he talks about the language of our heart. He tied this to the HeartMath protocols. Can you explain this a little further from a real-life applications point of view?
I'm not sure I fully understand the question.
It says that they found a video by Greg Braden where he talks about the language of heart, and he tied the video to the HeartMath protocols.
Okay, now I get it. Greg Braden is a pretty well-known author and a frequent collaborator with HeartMath, and talks a lot about HeartMath in his presentation. So he is... he, along with us, is studying the heart and all its various properties physiologically and energetically. And you can go to the YouTube site to look at the Greg Braden video, Language of the Heart. There's a lot more that can be found at our website on the heart. I've barely talked about the whole field of what's called neurocardiology and how the nervous system of the heart impacts the brain. It's a whole area in and of itself, fascinating. Called heart-brain communication. There's a lot more there than we have time to go into, but it is there as a great resource.
Yeah, and again, for those listening, it is HeartMath, HeartMath.org. Go to the site, check it out. I did. Again, Jeff, thank you. You guys are doing some great things, and that's what we want to put out here on Answers for the Family, are great things that can benefit all of us. So, can you keep us posted on what's coming up? It sounds like you have a lot of good things going on. When you have something new, please let us know. We would love to have you back.
Alan, thank you so much for having me today. I really appreciate the whole venue and what you're offering. It's an important platform, not just obviously myself, but for other people, because again, the dialogue and the conversation and the pursuit is so helpful. We're all looking for more answers and more clarity as we try to navigate through this very busy, active time we live in. So thank you so much for inviting me.
You're very welcome. And again, everybody, go to the website, check it out, and be with us next week on LA Talk Radio as you listen to more of Answers for the Family. Thank you.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.